We are commencing with the Central Committee meeting to actually take part in the meeting as far as voting, debating, or bringing up new motions. You must be a member of the Central Committee. To be a member of the Central Committee, you must be a dues-paying member. You must be a resident of Maryland. You must be a registered libertarian voter in Maryland. And you must agree to the non-aggression principle of Article 2 of our Constitution. Dr. Glaser, would you read the list of those we have so far that are Central Committee members?
Dean Ahmad, Eric Witt, Richard Davis, Robert Glaser, Robert Johnson, Kristen Kaskovac, Ron Keene, Michael Linder, Colleen and Sean Quinn, Steve Kim, Scott Spencer, Tony Spezia, Arvin Vora, Theo Lancaster, Christopher Bannon, Janae Haw, Chelsea Snyder, and Beth Woodall. Did I miss anybody?
Angela and Micah are dues paying members.
Angela Reese and Micah Reese are they just signed as charter members.
Tom, thank you for doing that. Everyone should have a copy of the agenda and the treasurer's report. Is there anybody else who was not listed who wants to be or thinks they should be a Central Committee member? Mr. Summers, he's a dues paying member also. You've got to do it by today.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have 20 votes?
No.
Okay, yeah, I can't do it today.
23 Central Committee members present and a 32nd, and I have no proxies represented.
You're a member. You just joined.
I paid $6
for
a night.
Oh, but you're not a member. Oh, now it's awesome. Okay. That's what you would ask me then. Okay, thank you for, that was Dr. Glaser with the credentials report. Approval of the minutes. Our last Central Committee meeting was January 9th at Stu Sims' house. It was for the most part, the purpose of nominating candidates, but it was an open meeting. The minutes are in the current newsletter. Are there any corrections or amendments to be made to those minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are passed. The treasurer's report, Mr. Linder.
Okay, did you just pass them out?
Yes.
Yeah. You presented the tax copy, but at my own
there you go.
All right. Guess you guys have a few minutes to look at it. The period of time was 2 days before Central Committee meeting on August 8th. And then I stopped 3 days ago on March 9th. As you can see, basic income is basic monthly income, state membership. We're going to do the convention here. And then all those can list what we spent There's three items there you see there in quotes for the money, and I quote brackets. That is in kind, meaning there's an expense that the Libertarian Party may have had, but I did not pay it through a check from the Libertarian Party, but someone else, the kindness of their heart, paid for it. So, and I think, well, tells, I don't think any of the questions that we had. The only thing is, Bill, just to make sure people think we're rich with money, let's pay for the convention here.
Does anybody have any questions for the treasurer? Is there any objection to passing the treasury report as is? Mr. Sims?
The numbers don't seem to add up. The opening balance plus income plus expenses or whatever, however you need to calculate it, doesn't seem to add up. I guess whether you were calculating an undeposited check into the balances, I don't know.
Yes.
Hey, you want to move on while I...
Well, let me ask you for approval.
May I suggest that we remand the treasurer's report to the treasurer until we can rectify this at a later meeting? Okay, hearing no objection, we will do so. And Stu, if you would find that, let me know the specific discrepancy. Okay, the treasurer's report. Registration right now in the state is 16,866. 4 years ago at this time, it was 9,785. We are picking up 147 new registrants every month. That's seven a day, and that's seven people a day who are forfeiting their ability to vote in a primary because Maryland is a closed state. We have also doubled the registration of the Green Party. What is significant about that? 6 years ago, we were exactly one behind the Green Party, at this time around 8,400. I submit to you that the growth in our numbers has been because of the aggressive running of candidates in our state party, many of whom are here today, and thank you all for doing that. Membership before coming in today was 81. We have been it had been down for a while, and we have been aggressively trying to push that. We have picked up more new members today. The monthly pledges are now up to $240 a month. We have some very generous pledgers here in the room today in particular, and thank you for doing that. Ballot access. Right now, we're a recognized party in Maryland. To maintain our party status, we need to get either 1% of the vote for our presidential candidate this November, or we have to have 1% of the registered voters in Maryland. We're about halfway to getting 1% of the registered voters. There's about 4,500 or whatever. But on the last day of the calendar year, it's about 37,000 you would need for 1%. If you have that, you are a recognized party. If not, you need to get 1% at the top of the ticket race. 4 years ago, Gary Johnson did get 1.2% in the presidential race, and then 2 years ago, our gubernatorial candidate, Sean Quinn, got 1.5%. So it is doable. There is a ballot access bill that has been introduced into the General Assembly. I'm going to momentarily invite the Vice Chair to discuss that and others. It's a presidential election year, so I'm not getting my hopes up that thing comes out of committee. I guarantee you that. Candidates. We currently have six candidates that are officially on the ballot for the three citywide races, mayor, comptroller, and president of the city council. We also have three U.S. House candidates on the ballot right now, including Ms. Kasperzak in the seventh. Also Jason Wunder in the eighth, and Matt Beers, who will be here shortly, in the first. We also will have two candidates that will be applying for nomination momentarily. I was hoping we could get a full slate of federal candidates. Unfortunately, the filing deadline was moved up from July 1st, what it used to be in a presidential year, to the first week in February. This is done to keep parties like ours off the ballot, and it just made it very difficult to get all those candidates on the ballot. I'm grateful to those who are running. The one good thing that we do have this year for the first time in my history in the party is that we actually have a one-on-one race. And that is in the city comptroller's race with John Bomback. I'm surprised the Republicans did not try and jam somebody in there like they have in the past. So that is one nice thing we'll have, probably be going up against. Who was the comptroller? Dixon? Joan Pratt Dixon? Joan Pratt, okay. I would now like to invite our Vice Chair, Eric Blitz, to briefly speak about what's going on with his lobbying efforts in Annapolis in the General Assembly.
Okay, so on your tables with a handout is the detailed information. We a lot of our work comes through working with coalitions. When you have a small party, you need to leverage their power because we don't have the ability to pay lobbyists to regularly meet with legislators, committee chair. So we do a lot of work with the ACLU of Maryland, the Common Cause, with the Delaware Maryland Health Association. So you'll notice somewhat of a bias in the legislative work that leans towards those groups, but that's the price of getting to a result. Last year, well, it started in 2014. Last year, we were an instrumental party in getting decriminalization of marijuana passed, and I think a lot of people now in the legislature give us some credit for it. That matters. Because as you move on, every time they keep hearing you before these committees, they start listening a little more. We actually had Republicans at the end of Life Options Act testimony asking the Libertarian Party to participate more. That's not a bad result. So we worked on a lot of marijuana bills. In part, it's a defensive battle this year. That's because election cycle and the presidential cycle, but also because there's a lot of groups, the police unions and police groups, who mobilize to try to push back. They recognize our general strategy, which is marijuana legalization gets cut with 1,000 cuts, and that's the way it gets defeated each time, legislatively. So somebody will say, I worry about drugs driving. I worry about this. There's always one little thing. So instead of getting rid of all of prohibition and just putting this up and down something, push that agenda item in front of the public, in front of the legislators on a regular basis. Probably is not going to happen. Even in 2017, it's probably a multi-year fight, even as we are already in our third year. We will have a legalization bill this year, but typical politics, somebody found a way to file it late, and now it's before a special committee, which means we don't get a hearing until it gets reassigned. So there's a lot of back and forth. I did get to work on a corporate tax reduction. This, I would describe myself as an incrementalist when doing this kind of work because I'd rather get some good, more libertarian results than nothing. But this bill stressed my, gave me more heartburn than any other because this is true incrementalism. To reduce the corporate tax rate from 8.25 to 6.25 over 4 years. So, we have been very successful on public transparency bills. We had three of them passed last year. We had quite a lot of strategic work with the Open Government Coalition, and we will probably get another Open Meetings Act fix. Sean Quinn might know that down in Calvert County there's been a lot of fights over local legislatures preventing participation through the Open Meetings Act, and we have a bill in to fix that. He's not in Calvert County, he's down that way, he hears about it. And we're fighting back against what's called the back of the decision, which limits the ability when somebody files a complaint against a government worker for wrongful conduct in their position from getting the records about how that complaint was resolved. What the court did was find that it was strictly a personnel record, not an investigatory record. Under the Maryland Public Information Act, the personnel record is absolutely, mandatorily, 100% shielded. An investigatory record in the past, there's a balancing test. I represent local government in Maryland and regularly have to advise custodians of record. And you go through this whole balancing test about what elements of the investigation can be. This decision threw it out. So we worked very hard with the ACLU to try to get that. We're cautiously optimistic. Testified in behalf of in support of the redistricting commission, the independent redistricting commission when political gerrymandering. for anybody that's paid attention to that issue. In the past, General Assembly, the Democrats are... entire argument is we recognize and agree that it's absolutely evil. All the things you're saying about it are wrong. We can only fix this grave evil if the Republicans in another state were willing to work on it and do the same thing with it. So there's been a lot of, you know, back and forth. So, but earlier today, Walter Olson was here, and I wish he had been able to last long enough just so I could recognize him. Walter, libertarian, was at Cato. Was the co-chair of the Redistricting Commission Review Board in Maryland. They did a lot of great work and helped raise the profile of libertarian arguments against political gerrymandering. I don't know what I'm going too far. The other thing I worked very hard on was the End-of-Life Decisions Act, which is similar to the Court of Law. It removes the legal prohibition against an individual patient who is terminally ill with prognosis of less than 6 months to live from receiving medical assistance in their process of dying. It, to me, is one of the most perfect kind of libertarian bills because it puts at the very core the idea of personal control over some of the most intimate parts of your life and draws that distinction with those people who are more willing to say, oh no, you know, have X, Y, and Z reasons why the government should prohibit that. And regardless of whether you would make that decision yourself, I think most people agree, right, the vast majority of Marylanders of any party agree, that an individual should make that choice themselves, not have the state preclude that choice. We did some free speech work for students, state-sponsored media. I don't know how much you know about that, but basically when a school newspaper or school play, not only can they restrict that speech, all high school or college level speech, but when it's state-sponsored media, they have even greater leverage to restrict that. There was a case back in the 80s that gave about as broad a protection to students as possible, but that was overturned. So we're trying to overturn that in a very Tenth Amendment kind of style in Maryland. It's not going anywhere, I'll tell you that, because it was amazing how quick the Boards of Education and the various powers in Maryland education came out against that. Oh my gosh, we can't allow these students to have free reign. But it was a fun bill to work on. And we got ballot access testimony Monday. Like Bob said, it's probably not going to get out of committee. But the one value that I think doing this type of work has brought us is we are now getting asked by people to come and testify on various bills. At some point, when we get a little closer on ballot access, it'll be my turn to ask for those groups to help support us, and hopefully that will...
They better deliver.
What's that?
They better deliver.
They better deliver, yeah. So, any other questions? Yes, Mike.
In Baltimore, it's not a newspaper on Sunday. Unless it's preaching. They talk about the liquor laws reform. Like taking 14 years from them to do it, it's not like 11 inches thick, but it's 20 pounds. Does something like that work well for us to get behind? I don't want to offend the liquor lobby, but out here, we're at least straight now. Our getting laws make it much simpler and easier to understand that, you know, you just barely cross the state lines, you violated six laws unintentionally. So
whether we should get involved is a different question about whether we think it's good or not bad policy. The one thing that I've absolutely hated about the marijuana argument is, let's act and regulate marijuana like alcohol. Oh my God, no, you do not want to do that. Maryland has one of the worst forms of regulation for alcohol in the nation. It is Byzantine, and like Mike said, you can pile up the regulations. Every single General Assembly session, if you watch it, there's probably 20 bills on various liquor boards. What they're trying to do is condense them. The reason why it's probably not a good idea to get involved in that is that's not a topic that is that we have a voice in. It's a lot like the budget. You have to have people at the table of power for that discussion. But that's ultimately just about power. It's not about policy. And so I try to restrict myself to policy questions. It focuses our message on principles rather than whose ox is being gored. The closest thing we got to the politics was really the gerrymandering thing, which, you know, it was a political question. So that's why I don't think we should get involved. If you want to get involved, then I'll help you do it.
Well, I mean, in the second 14 years, I just did, you know, I mean, obviously the liquor, but, well, people find the liquor lobby the most effective lobby in Apple, so I just didn't, you know, I'm installing it forever. But.
Yeah, I have no problem of setting a lobby, a liquor lobby. You know, we did come out on Facebook for messaging in favor of ending the monopoly over in Montgomery County. They have a monopoly on the a government monopoly on the sale and distribution of alcohol. And the advantage to us is the comptroller came out against it, Rancho, and allowed us to do some leveraged messaging against it. And a lot of people liked it. We got a lot of people interested in at least conversations about libertarian approaches on that subject. But that's all I've done on liquor licensing. It is a hard area for us to participate in until we have 25 libertarian House of Delegate members. Get on.
Any other questions for Mr. Blitz? Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Sims.
Would it be appropriate at this time to have to remove my objection to the president's report?
It would not. So it's legit?
No, it's legit. So I would like to remove my objection.
Okay, is there any objection to passing the treasurer's report as is?
Yes. Beanabon. Accepting the treasurer's
report. Accept the report. Thank you. Hearing none, the report is accepted. Thank you, Dean. Dr. Jim Lark is our LNC regional rep. He normally comes to all of our events. He is actually, as Mr. Bose was talking about, Students for Liberty are having an event in Europe. Jim is speaking that event today. So our alternate is Scott Spencer. And would Mr. Spencer come on to briefly chat about the fine doings of the LNC?
Well, Arthur can talk about it too, since he's the vice chair. But yeah, Jim was sorry he couldn't be here. I can't remember the last one of these he actually missed.
He hasn't.
Including the year that he went to North Carolina in the morning and then drove up here for dinner.
And stayed and drank beer afterwards.
Right, that's why I'm even going to mention that. So just some of the things that are happening at the national level. I don't know if any of you are national members or if you've gotten your LP news yet, the new one. I just got this week. But it has the new logo on it. We're trying a new branding campaign. Look a little more polished, a little more professional. So that was there. Kind of along the same lines. One of the new, not employees, but contractors at the national office is working on affiliate support. And one of the things that he's doing is it's creating templates that we can use to roll out a new website to, you know, some of the state affiliates, I mean, some of them have either defunct websites or websites that are 10 years old and look pretty rough. So he's helping them get up to speed with new technology. A lot of those are based on Nation Builder, so they have somewhere to put the data dumps of LP member information that comes from National. And then at the last LNC meeting just a couple weeks ago, a kind of ad hoc committee was formed to create a new website. Or not for them to create a website, but for them to go out, find case bids, and rebuild LP.org so that it isn't quite as cluttered and the back end structure is a little better also. In terms of ballot access, because that's one of the big things at the national level, we came out of the election 2 years ago with, I think, the most ever states, over 30. And this year, we look pretty good for the presidential election. It looks like, I know we turned in the signatures. I don't think they've been verified or validated yet in Oklahoma, but Oklahoma is one of, has historically been one of the worst states in the country. It's practically illegal to be anything but a Democrat or Republican. And so finally, it looks like we're going to even make ballot access in Oklahoma. And there are good plans going forward for some of the other tough states, too. Illinois is also a pretty tough one, but we're likely to have at least 48, if not 50 states access. And then, you know, some of you, if you pay any attention to what's happening at the national level, have probably noticed a downward trend in membership and fundraising, but a lot of the state chairs have reported that they're seeing numbers going up. We think that a lot of the attention is just being focused at more local levels, and having strong affiliates is not necessarily a bad thing, so take that as, you know, kind of, not necessarily good news, but balance, so... I don't know if anybody has
any questions for Mr. Spencer.
In what way? You're worried that they're mining our data, or that we're mining our members' data?
I mean, alright, so speaking
for myself,
speaking right now, it's really difficult for me. I'm not into it. I don't know. I also am. And figure out how to maximize everything. So, something like this, for a lot of the people that I work with, who are working in the mining world, they're not going to want to give up something that's tofu is okay. You become a bit more comfortable with tofu, but if you do some bland stuff, they don't like the bland stuff.
I can understand, I mean, you know, concern about privacy and things like that. And, you know, nobody's saying you have to use this platform. Right now, the only thing the National Party is using it for is
any other questions for Mr. Spencer?
Okay. The things that we don't get ballot access on, are they able to write in the candidate, or, I mean, how does that work?
It depends. I mean, every state has different laws. I mean, some places you can write in whatever you want, but they're not going to count it. Others will. I mean, it's a toss-up. And even the states where we get ballot access for the president, here in Maryland, you get ballot access for the party. It applies to all candidates. Others, you get ballot access just for the president. So that varies too. I mean, the laws are, I mean, 50 different versions. Well, 51 for DC. So that's one of the reasons it's been so fine.
Any other questions for Mr. Spencer? Thank you very much. Scott, have you missed a meeting in 4 years?
Yes.
Good. Just one?
I was in Tokyo.
Okay. No, but my point is, Scott's an alternate, yet he has better attendance than almost all the actual members on the LNC, and thank you for that. Exactly. Regarding ballot access, all states are different. Maryland's probably about a C. There are some states that are better. It could be worse. Pennsylvania, we need 22,000 signatures. Virginia, we need 5,000 signatures. West Virginia, we're on the ballot, but if you're running for statewide office, you have to pay about a $1,700 filing fee just to run.
Worse than Maryland.
Yeah, exactly. And Speer Lancaster, unfortunately, had left. There was nobody who ran for governor as a third-party candidate between 1970 and 2002 when Speer ran, and he spent $40,000 of his own money to get on the ballot, and because of the efforts, we had double petitioning, and because of the efforts he went through, the Green Party was able to sue and get the ballot access much improved in 2003. So I'll always be grateful to Speer for what he did. We should be on the ballot in all 50 states. If we do get knocked off, it's going to be because of the Democrats and the Republicans trying to do so. They're trying to fight us in Maine right now. The Republicans did get us knocked off in 2012 in Oklahoma and Michigan and tried like hell in Pennsylvania. So that fight is coming. Count on it. So, but we are in good shape.
Pennsylvania, the hardest part is not the signatures themselves, but the fact that it's challenged me. And anybody can say, you know, I don't think that those signatures are valid, and we have to then defend them, which costs a lot of time, a lot of money.
And a lot of lawyers' fees.
Do pay their legal fees, too.
Exactly. So it's a rigged game, you know, and it's only going to get worse, not better. But that also gives confirmation as to why we definitely aren't getting under the skin of the establishment, and what really does, you know, give me hope for the future that they feel the need to play these types of games. Thank you, Mr. Spencer. Does anyone have any questions for me regarding the chair's report or the state of the Maryland Libertarian Party before we proceed? Okay, program committee. We had an amendment to one of the issues on the program. Dr. Glazer, would you please read the language?
The committee recommended by a 6-1 vote to change the state program bullet under health care to promote a free market system that respects the freedom of individuals to control their own health care, end of life choices, medicine, treatment, and health insurance.
Mr. Boyce, would you like to comment on the change in the language?
Sure. Well, we wanted to insert end-of-life choices. That was inserted in 2008, I believe, by, you know, reference to the national bylaws, because we're going to have to be back in front of the legislature on the end-of-life options act. And so we wanted to insert that, and then there was some grammatical corrections to the way it's just a presentation of something else. That's the major substantive choice addition is to add end-of-life choices.
Okay. This plank can be debated. It cannot be amended. Would anyone like to speak out against this amended portion of the program?
Can we hear from the dissenting vote that
there was not already? So my simple reason was I don't think it's necessary. I don't know if you want me to add something that really isn't changing anything. I'm not taking away from it. So we just left it alone. That was as good as we're going to get, you know. Better was worse than the enemy was good enough. That was my objection to it.
Okay. Any other comments for or against?
Just a brief thing about four. one reason we're here is we're working with a group on this thing that has a membership of 3 million members in Maryland. Having the ability to quote your platform plank to 3 million people, that helps. And I often get surprised by various events. We have two press conferences and a lobby day on the end-of-life options act. I get surprised when people go, oh, I'm a libertarian, or I love libertarians, or whatever. This time now, you do? Okay, good. But this bill brought out a lot of people who really love the fact that the libertarians are supporting it. So having that kind of access is kind of why I want to do it. I agree with Mike that it doesn't really change. It doesn't change the way I'm going to advocate, but it's another way of getting a message out there that we support this position.
Dinamon.
Move to close debate.
Any objection to closing debate and taking the vote? Hearing none, all those in favor of this change to the program say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Not even you. passes. Nomination of candidates. We have two candidates, potential candidates, who are applying for nomination to office. First is Scott Soffin. He is running for the U.S. 7th Congressional District. This is Elijah Cummings' district, Howard County, and Northwest Baltimore County. Mr. Soffin.
Oh, am I supposed to talk?
Yes.
So, Scott Soffin, I'm not going to win this election.
Elijah Cummings is a big figure in the civil rights area. My district includes Western Baltimore. He's in. So the question obviously is then, why am I putting in this effort to run? And I guess there are two things that I want to point out. One is that I think that the best form of advertising, the most cost-effective form of advertising that this party has, is having candidates on the ballot. That everybody gets that ballot and everyone sees the Republican, the Democrat, and the other guy who's there. And if the word libertarian doesn't show up, we're invisible to them. No matter what else we do, if we're not on the ballot, they couldn't vote for us if they wanted to, and it won't occur to them to vote for us. So part of this is me just being on the ballot to help the party. The second item that I bring up is I'm going to run this campaign, if you want to call it that, the same way I ran my campaign two years ago. Which is, I'm not promoting Scott Sauthin for office, because Scott Sauthin's not going to get elected, and in 10 years, when we maybe do have a chance of getting elected, Scott Sauthin probably won't be around. What I'm going to be emphasizing is the Libertarian Party. So to the extent that I do interviews, to the extent that, you know, I'm on debate-type panels, to the extent that I do advertising, the emphasis is going to be to vote Libertarian, vote for the Libertarian Party, and I'm going to be de-emphasizing my own name. They're not going to remember me. They're going to remember the Libertarian Party, hopefully, when they're in the ballot. That's it for me.
Questions for Mr. Sauthin?
Wow, applause! I like this.
No questions? Okay, all those in favor of Mr. Sauthin? Oh, Dinamon.
Is there any significant agreement you have with the Libertarian Party platform?
Oh, boy, many. But you're probably referring to the fact that I'm not as enthusiastic a supporter of gun rights as the party would be. And I suspect there are probably a number of other things that I would differ from the party. I'll just tell it a few years ago. Again, my objective here is to go with the party because I agree with more than I disagree with. And I found that 2 years ago, I was never in a situation where I had to say, I differ from the party on this issue. If I am in that situation, I'll probably say, I differ from the party on this issue, and here's my opinion. But the areas of difference just never came up.
So what is your position on
I'm not sure if I can articulate it other than I do believe that the government has I think the Supreme Court is in error when they interpret the Second Amendment as being about individual rights rather than a militia. And I do think that the government has an interest, if they believe that restricting gun rights reduces violence, in restricting their gun rights.
Is that your position with regard to local governments, or do you feel that way about the federal
government? Wow. You assume that I've given this a whole lot more thought than I have. I would think that it has to be a federal issue, right? Because if you have loose gun laws in one state and tight gun laws in another, then the guns will just flow across the border easily. So it would have to be something that is geographically broad. But I'm going to suggest that if there's a litmus test to be a good libertarian, that the Libertarian Party is not going to be able to grow very far. Right? If I look at my three choices out there, I could be a Democrat, I can be a Republican, I can be a Libertarian. I am more Libertarian than I am Democrat or Republican. Now, if there's a checklist of things you have to believe in order to become a Libertarian, you're going to be constraining the ability of the party to grow. Rather than just saying, look, we welcome everyone, these are our core beliefs, the platform, probably everyone disagrees with something that's in that platform. You don't let the point.
Well, the only litmus test I believe in is the non-aggression principle, which, since you're a member of the Maryland Party, I presume you agree with.
Yes, I do agree with that.
But you're also asking to be our representative, and therefore I require a little bit more than just agreement.
Okay.
Any other questions? You got to be a central committee member to ask a question. Mr. Quinn.
Yeah. Being a candidate myself, I have to tell you, I'm a little offended when I hear people stand up and say, I'm not going to win. Because if you're going to be negative running your campaign, what's to say you're not going to be just negative pushing the Libertarian Party out there? If you're going to do this, you need to want to win. You may lose. I lost. But you need to be positive and say, look, I want to win. I want to make changes. I want to see the Libertarian Party grow. If you can't do that, then I don't want you to be running for office.
The option is entirely up to you. I'm doing this as a favor to the party. And I would just fundamentally disagree. I think I'm being realistic that I'm not going to win. It's not my opening statement when I'm talking to someone from the press or from the media. I think it makes for a poor advertisement. But within the family, I'm going to be honest here. And you might have that winning attitude. It might get you pumped up and make you work harder. It doesn't for me. I'm going to be realistic about what I'm trying to achieve. And I'm just out there trying to promote the party and using it as a platform to promote the party.
Mr. Blitz.
I'd just like to be heard on this nomination. I support Scott. I disagree with him. I don't vote 100% on the Second Amendment. But I do think doctrinal, adherence is important. I get a lot of people come to me saying, only the libertarians weren't so worried about the marijuana. I'll just say, if Scott's campaign 2 years ago was a campaign I think that his party should be proud of, he did a fantastic job putting out. What are those signs? They had three messages, right? Three different alternatives.
Yes, they did. One was just end the war on drugs, with the website underneath it. One was fiscally conservative, socially liberal, with the website underneath it. I forget what the third one was. I'll say
it. End the war on drugs.
Foreign policy.
End the war on drugs was the first one.
One was vote libertarian.
What? That was it. That's it was simply vote libertarian.
The reason I bring that up those signs were popping up all over the place. And those are good issue-oriented messaging for libertarians. They all have the word libertarian on them. They may have had a logo. I don't remember. They were
they
nice.
Did have the logo.
Well-done signs that directed them to messages. My disagreement with Scott over the Second Amendment, I don't think it matters if you're doing that campaign. It might matter if he gets asked that question in a debate, and he doesn't exactly match up with our program, but I would rather reward people who are willing to run and put out those kind of messages, because I think Scott did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Mr. Dowski.
I'd like to second that. When I ran last time, it was statewide, and the party doesn't give you a lot of help. And I was driving around the Beltway, and I saw these signs that we've had to work at. he did a great job getting the message out for the party, like he said. Because in a couple of years, nobody's going to remember his name or my name or your name, but they'll remember libertarians. That's the only hope we have. So keep it up.
Well, thank you. I do have to say, I'm planning not to do signs this time. I'm planning to try direct mail and see if that works better. But the same basic kind of message is going to be in the direct mail.
I would also like to say, if I may, a couple of things. Number one, Mr. Stauffen is in a very left-wing congressional district. He is running to the left of Elijah Cummings. And there's a bunch of things that this so-called Democrat, like most of those hypocrites, and as I was talking about during David Bowes' speech, are total hypocrites on civil liberties and foreign policy. They talk a big game. This is one thing I love that the libertarians are doing. Number two, Mr. Stauffen's position on the Second Amendment is no different than Bill Redpath, who is a two-time former national chair and was the Virginia LP chair until last weekend. And third, there are some I share Eric and Leo's feelings about his candidacy. Every candidate has one thing that they disagree with. Mr. Beers, our candidate in the first, who just came a few minutes ago, he disagrees with us somewhat on immigration, but we still nominated him. I don't think Scott is again, it's not like he's bad on this, bad on this, bad on this, or whatever. He's not totally, for gun control. He just disagrees to the limitations or whatever. I tend to agree with Eric that I am a hardcore libertarian period, but I was pleased with his campaign and would be honored to have him as a candidate again. Dr. Glaser.
You saw the declaration of intent?
Yes.
Bob, do we have any other candidates running for this office who saw the declaration of intent?
No. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of Mr. Sovin's candidacy, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Sean, are you going to speak up?
No, I'm not going to oppose you. I just wanted to make sure that you were actually going to be a 100% positive military party.
Sounds
you
good.
You did last time. I agree you did. And I hope this time that if you're going to go someplace, you'll call me and we can be there together and work for you.
Sounds good.
Okay. Get your certificate of nomination from Robert and I before you go.
Very good.
Thank you, sir.